Yeah. Something designed to make your spine whine one time. With DJ Honda, this is how we represent. You know what I'm saying? We gonna bash you in the head with something real, real nice. Y'all hold on. Here we go. Check it out. And you don't stop.
What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. Yeah. What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo
with DJ
shit.
Honda.
What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, baby.
Walk in New York with the big stick loaded. Most voted for the Daily Tabloid from Tokyo to Roppongi Square. I'll be there, and as the plan unfurls, I freak the geisha girl. So that X, I'm on New York, then the yellow cabs. I move your pectoral muscle worn down to your abs. My man Honda, not the car, but the DJ. Attack the pans and move fast with your hands. Up in the wild lands and walk across the burning sands. Can I have a little more sake in my cup? Yo, Honda, I'm kind of fond of these Japanese women. They treat me like a king and scream my name out loud. There's room for one more.
That Derek X Jen took me back, man. That was nice, dude.
So we were like, let's see. I knew Kevin back when that Filipino was little.
back when he was still hot.
He comes from Compton, Milpitas. We were like,
he still isn't he hot, motherfucker?
21 or 22 or. Or around that time, I think the producer was like 12 or 13.
That's like, I'm talking 95 on that right there.
95, yeah. So I'm very easy. I know exactly what age I was when I was 95. I was 20 years old. So yeah, producer was about 11. You were probably like 19.
Yeah.
Costs only think you're 19. Kevin, what's your real age?
With that DJ Honda cassette, I had the cassette. Can't front. Like, I gotta tell the truth on that.
I had to do the high speed dubbing on the cassette because I had the high speed dubbing. But the problem with the high speed dubbing
when you're rolling the Hyundai Sonata, old man. School, with the bass,
with the bass with my badass 6.5 inch, six and a half. I didn't even have woofers, dude. I had my 6.5. I thought I was rocking back then. Bad man. So now like but who came around and like told you like, hey, you know, you need to get this in your car and stuff. I mean, come on, dude. It's all because of me. My car bumps, dude. And after 20 years in the game, I hate how people always say
in the game.
I hate how everybody says, like, you know, like if it's like especially like rappers like nowadays or whatever it is. And first of all, rap really started going downhill when they started like classifying it as like hip hop. It's like people go like, do you listen to hip hop? I'm like, no, I listen to rap. I'm like, I've never listened to hip hop. And so then you have all these like rappers come out and stuff and say how like, you know, they're in the rap game. It's like, come on, dude. You're not in no game, dude. It's like it's a game that you've already lost because you already signed your life away on some bad contract. So you're not in any game. You know, it's like playing me against Monopoly. Like, you know, when you play me against Monopoly, I may not win all the time, but I win. Because you get so mad playing me that you don't ever want to play me again. So I'll take that as a victory.
That's true in Monopoly, but not in Risk.
Yeah, because I always beat you in Risk.
Aw.
You beat me one time and you wrote it down. You wrote it down once.
Oh, goodness.
Man, you do not compare to me in Risk, dude. You beat me once. And it was a game with the
Glass
producer.
Glass Nose.
How many times did you beat me in Risk? Once.
We haven't played in like 15 years, but I would say I beat you more than once.
You beat me once.
I'm gonna have to. I beg to differ, son.
Yeah, well, you'd be wrong. So there we go.
Well, if that in fact is the case, you may have won, but you never beat me.
You never beat
me. Ooh, yeah.
Easy there, Macho. So this is falls right in line with the road to WrestleMania because it's kind of this, that, and this. We have better have my donuts over here. I'm Bad News Ramen, and you got the pay per view. I didn't get it. And there's a couple things that happen that I want to talk to you about because it's all fine and cute when it's a Randy Orton and John Cena match, but you had a Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns match on Raw, and the crowd is starting to like chant for like CM Punk, or they're starting to chant for like Macho Man and stuff, like during the Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns match. So I kind of want to know what your take is on, like, I think it's the whole kind of New Jersey concept where every crowd in the know wants to top these guys. But the New Jersey, the thing about the New Jersey match was that it was after WrestleMania, and there's a lot of storylines that people didn't like, and there was like matches, even like the matches that were good, like they wouldn't chant during those matches because they allowed the performers that really worked their ass off to, like, and they watched them, and they wouldn't chant during their matches. But during the matches that they didn't care about, they were chanting for, you know, like JBL and the King and all this other stuff. But here's a question I have, is that if there's a question here at all, you have two really good workers. Like, you have Roman Reigns, who's pretty, he's on Daniel Bryan level right now in terms of being over and being hot. You have Bray Wyatt, who has probably for like the past maybe two pay-per-views has really been the match of the night. And so you have two really good workers, and then these guys are starting to chant for CM Punk. I want to get your take on what you think about crowd reacting like that and trying to make a name for themselves.
I mean, I kind of took it as kind of looked bad on the Green Bay crowd to me. And that wasn't the only match on Raw that I felt like the crowd was flat. I mean, the biggest pop of the night was Hogan, and rightfully so. I mean, it's Hogan. And I
didn't even think that pop was that loud, though, dude.
But that was by far the biggest pop of the night. I mean, I thought Swagger and Langston had a really good match, and they didn't go for that at all. I thought Christian and Sheamus was a respectable match. They didn't really, nothing happened there in terms of crowd reaction. I really liked the Uso and Outlaws. You know, even though it was only about a 10-second match, I thought it did the job, and because it was so short, that got a pretty solid reaction. But I mean, the Minnesota crowd was going nuts for Wyatt versus Shield, and then you move over to Green Bay here, and like they were flatline except for the Hogan pop, and it was even weird. I felt like when Daniel Bryan was out there, it was like when he was leading the Yes chant, like it was going strong, but like it would kind of tail off here and there when he wasn't like really going after it. I mean, anywhere he goes, he's supremely over. There's no question. But it didn't seem like that crowd was ready to get on their feet unless someone told them they needed to, is the way I felt. Minnesota's crowd for the Elimination Chamber, I mean, that crowd was, that seemed like a smart crowd to me. Like,
so I hate to do this to you, but you're not answering my question. The question I'm asking you is you're having the Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns match, which to me was really the only match of any type of significance. I mean, because after you told me what happened at the pay-per-view with Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt, that's the match I wanted to see. So they're doing this match, and all the hard work that they're doing in this match to me is getting kind of curtailed because the crowd's chanting for CM Punk, or they're chanting some stupid, you know, like Macho Man or whatever the chant was, but they're chanting during like a match where you had two of the best workers over the past 3 or 4 months. And that's the question that I'm asking you. It's like, what do you feel about that? I mean, how do you feel about, I mean, because at one thing is like when New Jersey happened, right? And we're saying like, hey, like they're finally voicing their displeasure with everything that's been going on with the WWE. And this is the only way that they can get through WWE creative to say, hey, like, you know, we're not going to take this anymore. And we want the matches that we want to see. Well, I think this is the match that people wanted to see. And I thought that any good that can come out of crowd interaction or how the crowd can kind of dictate what they want creative to do, I think they're shooting themselves in the foot by chanting during this match.
I mean, I think that's true, but I mean, you have to have a crowd that's a little bit sophisticated to figure that out.
So that's where you're going.
That's what I'm saying. And that's why I compare it, you know, that's why I compare it to Minnesota, because that match was, you know, we saw the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt match at Royal Rumble, and we were saying match of the year right there. That was like the early leader. This is there or better, this Shield versus Wyatt match. Crowd was all over it. And like the easy excuse for Raw would be like, well, the crowd doesn't know who to cheer for because it's essentially a heel versus heel match. But in, you know, Roman Reigns is really, he's working babyface. And at the Elimination Chamber match, the Shield worked baby to a T. Seth Rollins, I mean, Reigns is the guy, but Seth Rollins was the fucking man in Elimination Chamber. I mean, if you see that, it's like, that is, he put in that match, which is about 30, maybe a little bit more than 30 minutes. I mean, that was a Daniel Bryan match all the way. And better just in the fact that, you know, we're used to seeing all the spots that Daniel Bryan has, and everything's good, but, you know what spots are coming. But the bumps that Rollins was taking and the spots that he was hitting was stuff that you've seen him kind of do, but it wasn't, like, the formula. It came out of left field, like, about 4 or 5 times. It was really impressive what Rollins did, and the crowd responded to it. The crowd was in it the whole way. The crowd didn't care. I mean, they definitely reacted to Shield as the face, but they didn't really care, because even when the Wyatts were doing stuff, they were cheering for him too. And I just think it's, I can't say why Green Bay's crowd was the way it was compared to Minnesota, but it was the crowd more than what the product was, because I thought the Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns match was good. You know, I thought it was a really good match, and I thought it was worthy of being a main event. Like, even the parts where, you know, you might say it's like a slow part when they're doing like wear down holds or stuff, I thought they were performing pretty well. It wasn't like Bray was just sitting there doing some kind of like half-ass sleeper for an extended period of time. You know, he gets some punches in there and stuff. I mean, I thought everything was working really well, but just the crowd was reacting to it. And it's not like that was the only match of the night that they didn't react to.
The couple things with this Raw is that I fast-forwarded most of Raw. And part of it had to do is because I switched cable providers, so I don't get the...
Whoa.
Exactly, yeah.
What you got now?
I got UVerse.
Oh, you mean the one you were bashing like a few short weeks ago?
At least I don't have to pay up
for internet, right?
At least I get internet.
Ah, thank you. I believe that was my argument back then, but
and as all Alondra Blazes go and Sunnies go, I can admit that you were right and I was wrong. But the problem is that I do have the West Coast feed. So I can't, I mean, the way, like, typical, like, which sucks because the typical way that I would watch Raw is that if I got some time at, say, like, 6 o'clock, I can watch, like, the first 10 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I can, like, okay, now I can watch regular TV with the family and stuff and everything. We can have dinner or whatever it is. And then I can always go back. But I'm always, like, a half an hour or, like, maybe 45 minutes in. And then when I start watching, then I can just plow through the whole thing.
Yeah.
When this thing starts at 8 o'clock, it's like, well, 10 o'clock is about the time that I can start watching TV. And like, I watched Hogan and I watched him botch the WWE Universe as compared to the WWE E-Network. And then it's like the next match was.
It was Del Rio and Batista, right?
Yeah, which
that's a whole other conversation that, you know, we can get into if we want to start talking about Batista.
But I guess the thing that we can get into that, and I think we probably could and probably shall, but it's just like the thing that bothers me the most about this whole crowd interaction was that you're doing it wrong. And it's like, yeah, do it during the Batista match. And you can say, like, you can't do it during the Cesaro and Big E match because these are the guys that you're trying to push. You know, like the fans are trying to push, saying like, "Hey, these are the guys. These are the guys that deserve to have a match. Let's see what they can do." But then to kind of start chanting during that, I can see them doing something maybe between Christian and Sheamus because it's just kind of like a storyline that nobody really cares about. Mm-hmm. But I would believe that Christian has, you know, anybody that would do that during a Christian match, it's like, you don't know your history, dude. And you don't know, like, what this guy, in terms of what he has to do is in terms of a worker. He's putting everybody over. That's his job now. It's his role. Respect his role.
Yeah.
And cheer for him to maybe get a win. But, I mean, he's losing left and right. And if you're going to say that you're a big-time wrestling fan, like, oh, I'm a huge WWE fan. Well, it's like, respect what the guy is doing. You know, don't chant during his match. Don't chant during Chris Jericho's match when he's putting people over. And then you go into, like, the, you know, people go nuts over Roman Reigns. People are going crazy over Bray Wyatt, saying, these guys are the future, and I really respect these guys, and these guys are great. And then it's like, well, now I'm going to chant during their match, too. And all that does is just adds fuel to the fire of anything that WWE can say about, oh, you want us to push these guys? Well, we gave them the chance, and what did you guys do? You guys started chanting during their matches, saying it was, you know, saying it was boring or whatever it is by saying Macho Man or even saying Husky Harris and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's the big problem I have with this whole thing.
And you're right, but I think, like, you can't take an isolated crowd and, like, try to, I mean, WWE might just to fit their agenda, okay, but not every crowd is as sophisticated as every other crowd. And just to me...
But that's it right there, dude. You know, it's like, yeah, I can't take that, but WWE Creative can to fit their agenda.
Sure.
And if you're going to fight the necessary evil of what WWE Creative is, and they're telling you, like, what they believe is what is best for business, you know, and that's such an overused term now. But if you feed into that and fuel that, well, then that opens up. So, okay, well, let's start having John Cena at the end. The Brock Lesnar Undertaker thing, that's what people wanted to see. So, go ahead. I mean, finish off. I'm sorry to keep on cutting you off, but...
I mean, you're right, what you're saying. I mean, I don't think we're really disagreeing. I just think, like... I just think that's it. That is what it is. I mean, as a creative team, as a company, they can take whatever data they want and skew it in the direction they want to. I mean, I think the vast majority of crowds around the country are going to want to see Shield versus Wyatt's all the time and Daniel Bryan in big matches and stuff like that. But, you know, you're going to get your isolated crowds, especially in middle America where they're going to just, like, cheer for whatever they're supposed to cheer for. But I still think, you know, in back-to-back nights in two places like Minnesota and then Green Bay, Wisconsin, which demographically are pretty similar, like, one crowd was going crazy for that same match. One was dead for that match. I think it's still progress because I think if you look back 5 years, 10 years, like everywhere in that region is probably just going to go for like whatever they're getting spoon fed. So even though Green Bay was pretty much, I thought, a weak crowd on Raw, you know, I think, you know, it's not really fair to talk to you about because you didn't see Elimination Chamber, but you would have been proud of the Elimination Chamber crowd. In Minnesota, they were going hard for the matches that, you know, you would have probably wanted to see. And the matches that weren't doing shit, then, like, they didn't really care about them.
You know, one thing that me and you have always kind of combated watching wrestling, and the thing that we've never really liked about wrestling, and a lot of it had to do when the Monday Night Wars took off, and then all of these wrestling fans came out of the woodwork, saying, like, oh, I'm a big-time wrestling fan, and then... You know, they would find out that you're a wrestling fan, and then they would start talking about just, like, stupid stuff that didn't matter. Like, I remember one guy was, like, saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, like, oh, yeah, Sting, you know, what's going to happen with Sting next week? I was like, who cares what's going to happen with Sting next week? You know, it's like, it's going to be the same. It's like, you can't see the work that they're putting on you, and they just talk about so, like, small, like, mundane stuff that it really kind of showed that you have the marks and you have a smark. And we're two smarks that... And we're old school smarks, you know. And then you have the big marks. We'll have our mark out moments, but then you have the marks. And it just seems to me that there's a lot more marks, even though people think that they're smarks. There's a lot more marks than there are smarks. And I don't even know if if we can call ourselves smarks, but it's what we have to fight all the time. It's just stupid people doing stupid things, and it doesn't help the cause of what they say they want to do.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to go all political and stuff, but it's kind of like when the election comes around, you see, like, blue states and red states. It's kind of like the same states that are blue states in general are kind of cheering for change, and they're cheering for, like, you know, what they see in the ring and wanting to see new guys that are performing, getting the job done. And you got some really traditionalists out there that just, you know, they're going to take whatever they're spoon fed. It's pretty similar to that, as silly as it sounds compared to politics. It's kind of like that. I mean,
I think it's a very fair analogy what you're doing, because the red states, you know, those are the people that people pay attention to. They pay attention to the hardliners or whatever it is. And to me, everything that creative has been saying, they can always point back. And I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen, but now they can point to the Green Bay crowd and go like, oh, well, you know, this is what the people want, and we tried doing something different because of the reaction of Minnesota or whatever it is. I don't know if they rewrote stuff or changed the game plan the day after or whatever it is, but now they can always go back and go, hey, we put Bray Wyatt out there, we put Roman Reigns. They're not ready because they can't carry a crowd because people are chanting different things during that match. And it's just that is the problem that I've had with wrestling for a long time, is that I'm glad that there's a ton of people out there. I'm glad there's a lot of people on Twitter that say they're big time wrestling fans and everything, and they say all the right things, and then but basically what it becomes is they complain, they complain, they complain, and then there's people that tweet that probably come from that are from Green Bay that are complaining left, right, this, that, and this, and it's like it's always like the it's like the cool thing to do, right? So like right now the cool thing on Twitter is to say like, oh, you know, like Daniel Bryan is overrated, CM Punk is overrated, and this is like, I don't want to see Daniel Bryan or CM Punk because you guys don't deserve the spot, this, that, and this. It's always kind of like the new thing that you can do to be different, to try to create controversy here and there. So there's like a good and there's a bad to it. And my whole thing is like, can you just like shut up and just like watch wrestling for a change and see what it actually is? It's like, it's fake, right? Enjoy the athleticism of it. Enjoy the characterization of it. I never thought in this day and age, we're close to 40 years old, that I would be so engrossed in a guy like Bray Wyatt who just spits off all this old... I mean, it's old school wrestling. You know, his character is such an old school wrestler. It's like a character. But he does it so well. And I'm sitting there going like, I shouldn't be liking this guy. I shouldn't be liking because this guy's like a straight work. Everything he says is a work. His promos are a work. But I just get into it, and it's like there's that part that you know you want to believe, and you want to just kind of lose yourself in a character. And I never thought at this day and age that I would do that, and I never thought in this day and age that I would root for a guy like Bray Wyatt more than I root for a guy like Roman Reigns. I both like them equally, but I like Bray Wyatt because he's more fake. You know, he's more fake in terms of what a character is, where Roman Reigns is more real.
Yeah, but the thing is that Bray Wyatt plays that character perfectly, and that's what the difference is. When you know there's some characters you see and you know they're straight up work, but they're not doing it well.
Yeah, and like Fandango.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's a I wasn't even thinking of anyone in particular, but that's a perfect example. Whereas Fandango is trying as hard as he possibly can to like be the character that he's supposed to be, whereas Bray Wyatt just is that guy. And it is funny because I was watching like Bray kind of cut a promo on Monday. Well, yes, I was watching it earlier tonight, and I was thinking, like, you know, the charisma this guy has and the ability he has to talk. I mean, if they were to decide they wanted to put him on like the talk show circuit, I mean, he'd be a really interesting guy to talk to and hear where he came from. Because I mean, if you know, not to go with the whole Husky Harris thing, but I mean, he was a pretty regular guy and kind of an interesting guy even before he had this gimmick. But, you know, he'll never be there. And I really actually admire him for it because he's one of the guys at this point that in no way, shape, or form breaks kayfabe. And that's the thing, you know, like John Cena's breaking the fourth wall every opportunity he gets. You know, Roman Reigns, it's not like he breaks character, but his character is just kind of like the straight-up tough guy, so it doesn't really matter. And then something like Kofi, who's a pretty interesting guy to on Twitter and stuff like that, I mean, he kind of breaks kayfabe all the time. But Wyatt's really the one guy out there that like is completely engulfed in his character, and I find it really interesting that you know he can do that. And it's I think you know we talk about like guys that they bring back because they think they have mainstream appeal like Batista or whatever, but like Bray Wyatt's a guy that I think really could have some kind of mainstream appeal. Like if you would just look at like the opportunities that CM Punk gets, right? Like whereas, like, they put him on, say, like, The Talking Dead, you know, to talk about Walking Dead and stuff. Or, you know, I know his stuff got mixed on being on at midnight. But, I mean, you know, he's been a really fun guy to watch there, just like Jericho will be. Like, Bray Wyatt would be a guy that I would want to see on those kind of shows. And while they could put him there and he'd do really well, I don't think he is just because he's not going to break the character he has.
So Bray Wyatt really brings up an interesting point, especially with the things that you just said, too, because you bring up CM Punk, and CM Punk was like the cornerstone of a guy that is just who he is. It's like he's able to kind of go back and forth between kayfabe and shoot, and he does it very, very well. Mm-hmm. And I like CM Punk a lot. I mean, I don't think anybody does not know that about me. But I'd probably say right now, like, the one performer that I really like is Bray Wyatt. Now that CM Punk is gone, Bray Wyatt's probably my favorite guy to watch. And I'm just kind of wondering about that. And especially, like, with you, too, because I know you like him as well with everything that you just said. It's like, we like this, like, straight kayfabe guy. I mean, what does that say about ourselves? You know, it's like, we know we're investing our time and effort into a guy that's just playing, like, this straight character that we haven't seen I think he's like the one guy, like the one kayfabe guy that has this. I don't want to compare him to, say, to The Undertaker, you know. But
that would be the one.
That would be the one. But see, it was a different time, and it's funny because when The Undertaker was in his prime, it's like we wanted a guy that was more real, you know, because we knew it was kayfabe, and we didn't buy into it. Well, now you have Bray Wyatt; he's kayfabe, and I'm not saying that I want to go back to kayfabe and everything like that, but. At the same time, with Twitter out there, with the smarks out there, people saying that they're smarks, but then they do stupid shit like they did in Green Bay. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, what the, you know, and then you look at my favorite wrestler of all time, Ric Flair, who was pretty much a kayfabe character, but is an extension of himself. And The Rock was the same way. The Stone Cold was the same way. All Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, they're all extensions of their true personality, and that's one thing that JR always says, is saying like, hey, if you're going to be successful, you really need to be an extension of yourself. But this guy, I'm like, I don't think Bray Wyatt's an extension of who Rotunda really is as a person. I think it's more of a kayfabe. I think he can channel certain things, but it's just kind of like, right now, I really don't know, with me as a fan, what the hell is going on. All I know is that it's new, and it's something I haven't done since, say, Macho Man.
Yeah.
And that's, so, I mean, what point in time are we in with wrestling right now?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of indirectly got right to it. It's like, he's the only guy that's doing it. And because it is, even though we've seen it before, like probably 15, 20 years ago, because he's the only guy doing it now, it's fresh. So I think there's that kind of element to it. But then I would say in another way, it's almost like, I mean, I might be reaching on this one, but it's kind of like, you know how, like, when The Rock came out as Rocky Maivia and people couldn't stand him, and then he had to go to a place where he, like, really fucking turned against all those guys that didn't like him, and then that's where he got to The Rock character. I mean, I could see where Bray Wyatt is kind of that for Husky Harris, whereas, like, I mean, he was good as Husky Harris, but people couldn't stand him. I don't know why. Maybe it's because he was fat, or maybe it's because they felt he was getting pushed too much, or they didn't like the Nexus or whatever it was. But, I mean, from a guy that when he came through, as talented as he was, got buried and then kind of stuck in NXT and hidden away, I mean, I'm sure that really ate away at him to figure out, like, you know, what do I have to do to get there and be the guy on top? And he got to that place. So, I mean, maybe there is a dark place in him that he felt like he had to go to get back to the top. But I think it's a lot similar to what The Rock had to do in, like, kind of exercising the demons of Rocky Maivia and then turning it into The Rock.
And to piggyback on that as well, and to piggyback off of someone else, one of the best promos of all time from The Macho Man was "The Cream Always Rises to the Top." And he had the little creamer with Gene and with Mean Gene and stuff, and he has the creamer and stuff. He's throwing it all around and stuff. When Husky Harris was on, when they had that NXT show, which I really liked. I really liked the whole, I didn't like the whole kind of like mentor, this, that, and this, but I really liked NXT because you saw a ton of different styles. You saw guys that, some guys were really green. And I think Husky Harris, when he was there, I think he was with Daniel Bryan. And I think he was with Senshi as well? No, he wasn't with Daniel Bryan.
They were on the same season, but they weren't like aligned. It was,
yeah.
Because I remember Daniel Bryan, I remember specifically his mentor was The Miz, which was stupid.
But yeah. didn't Senshi win that year?
Senshi was the next year.
The next year? Wade Barrett? Okay. So you had, I mean, and actually like that first season that they had, I think, well, maybe it was the second season. It doesn't matter, but you had a ton of good guys out there. And the whole thing, you talk about Husky Harris, how people didn't like him. I didn't want to like Husky Harris because I really wanted Daniel Bryan to do something. You know, because I thought Daniel Bryan is like, this guy's a straight indie guy. I've heard a ton about this guy. And I really want to see him succeed. Mm-hmm. But then you'd have Husky Harris, and he would fight. And you're sitting there going, like, well, this guy's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And this guy's like, I don't want to like this guy, but I do like this guy.
Yeah.
And you had Wade Barrett, and Wade Barrett.
Wade was a lot like that, too. It's like, you know, I thought, like, you know, him coming out with that coat with the rose was pretty stupid and stuff. But he'd go and cut a good promo, and he'd always put on a good match. And Bray was really similar. I thought his gimmick was kind of corny with, he was always talking about the
Lamborghini and the Cadillac.
Yeah, the Ferrari engine with the tank with a tank body or whatever. And I thought that was kind of lame, but then you'd see him do his matches, and the guy could go. And when him and And when him and Mike McGillicuddy of the time were a tag team, that was a pretty good tag team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they didn't have a hell of a lot of charisma, but in the ring, those guys are really good.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's just kind of funny without, you know, we're on the road to WrestleMania, CM Punk is not involved. You have all these storylines that are kind of, you don't really know what's going on, and then you kind of have, I thought Cena did a good job of selling his knee, because you didn't know whether, I mean, you don't know if, I mean, it's like, you didn't know until he got into the ambulance whether it was true or not. I mean, I thought they played that really well with the trainers coming out, and you're rolling your eyes. I'm not talking about the whole flipping show. I'm talking about that moment in time. Just give me one moment in time, dude. You know, eighth grade graduation.
Here's the thing. In the same way that I say that I know no John Cena match is over until he's kicked out of two finishers, I also look at every time that guy gets an injury, and I know it's bullshit. I mean, the guy goes to, like, a couple of the weakest go-to moves in terms of gimmicks possible. It's like, I'm kicking out of finishers, I'm doing your finisher, and, I got to overcome some fake-ass injury. And they go to the well way too often with this guy. I don't even care anymore, man. I just think it's dumb. And it sucks, actually, because I'm actually getting to the point where, you know, I'm fine with watching Cena matches. I think he's putting on probably the best string of matches that I've ever seen him put on, you know, in this, like, time period. But it's the same weak crutch that he goes back to. Oh, I'm overcoming an injury. Oh, never give up. Oh, let me kick out of three finishers. And then, like, oh, I'm going to do your finisher. You do my finisher on me. It's weak-ass shit that we've seen over and over again. And, you know, while the guy can put on a decent match, you know, there's nothing innovative. To me, yeah, I'll go to this too. Like, John Cena is the Tupac Shakur of wrestling. Okay? I mean, people like him. You know, there's things that you can like about him. But you can never point to any one thing that he ever did that was innovative. It was always like, well, what has the other people done? Well, I'm just going to do that. And that's pretty much how I feel about him. I mean, he's basically running the Hulk Hogan playbook as much as he can do. Not as good on the mic, better in the ring. But it's like, oh, I'm overcoming this injury now. Oh, let me kick out of some finishers. There's nothing creative. And it was kind of funny, like, last night there was some Twitter post that Mick Foley put up where he was saying, like, how he could never, he had never seen anything like the reaction that Batista was getting. And then, like, I kind of went to read the whole thread, and there was a bunch of responses to it. And this one guy was saying, like, you know, how, and it got kind of, like, on the direction of John Cena, and he was saying, oh, well, you know, but you could tell Batista doesn't care about the business because John Cena, people like Cena and Mick Foley are always coming up with these new angles that keep stuff fresh. I'm like, where the hell does this guy ever come up with something that kept it fresh? You know, it's like, at least he can perform, which I can't even say for Batista at this point. And I would never think that I would say I'd rather watch John Cena than Batista. But at least when John Cena puts on a match, it's watchable. But in terms of things new and creative, there's nothing guys bring to the table.
I don't think people get your Tupac reference. And I don't think there's a lot of people that lived during that time. Because when you say Tupac, then of course you're going to have to bring up Biggie Smalls as well.
Well, I'm just like, people put Tupac out as the greatest MC of all time.
Yeah, and
he comes in a time frame where, like, there was a bunch of people that really started this whole thing going, and then there was this, like, new generation of people who listened to rap that hadn't listened to, like, the guys that really got it started, and they all gravitated to Tupac, but they really had no idea of where all this stuff came from.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with Biggie Smalls at the same time, because people were going nuts over that guy, too, and me and you are sitting going, like, you know what, we've seen this before. And we've seen it done by better people. And it's not even like a question of, say, like a bigger star. But we've had, you know, we've listened to all these albums beforehand and stuff of like, say, like smaller time acts. Mm-hmm. That kind of laid the groundwork for it. And these guys were able to capitalize on it and get kind of the mainstream attention by doing stupid things. Like starting the whole West Coast, East Coast beef and stuff and really pumping themselves up.
Doing the Humpty Dance.
You can do the Humpty Dance, yeah. And that's kind of the, well, I mean, you can say the same thing about Cena with the whole chain gang thing, you know, it's kind of,
that's exactly what I'm
yeah.
saying.
So, yeah. So that, I mean, that's kind of where that's kind of where we're at right now. It's like we're talking about the business that is wrestling right now, and there's a lot of people thinking that they know what the hell is going on with wrestling in terms of a lot of fans on Twitter, and they don't, because they haven't, you know, they don't know Rugged Ronnie Garvin. They don't know, They don't know Sweet Stan Lane. They also don't know, there's one guy, Black Bart or whatever. I mean, they don't know these guys, and they haven't, you know, they don't know Chris Candido. You know, they don't know all these guys that we know that we were forced to watch day in and day out.
Talking about the Portuguese Man of War over there?
Portuguese Man of War and the Sultan, who was actually Rikishi, and Hardcore Holly. You know, there's
as a race car driver.
It's just like it's kind of like this whole thing where, and I was bringing it up with Christian before. It's like you have a bunch of performers now that never had to go through everything that, say, like a Chris Jericho has had to go through, a guy that Chris Benoit's had to go through, even a guy like Stone Cold Steve Austin had to go through. I wouldn't put The Rock in that group, because The Rock was, you know, The Rock is kind of like the WWE star. He's the one that laid the groundwork for what we're seeing now,
right,
with people that really don't earn it. And it gets all this widespread acclaim. And the thing that bothered me the most when The Rock was coming back was people were talking about The Rock. Like, The Rock's this Rock. I'm like, but you guys don't understand. It's like, yeah, okay, The Rock didn't go through the indie system, but The Rock for 2 years was the best heel ever. For 2 years, he was the best heel. And then for like a year, year and a half, he was the best face that ever was. And then you had him against a guy that, like Stone Cold, who just was one of the best faces of all time. I mean, he is the best face of all time. You know, in terms of wrestling, in terms of promos, in terms of, like, fans like me and you who don't like Stone Cold or didn't like Stone Cold, we respect the hell out of that guy, even though we didn't like all of his gimmicks and all of his catchphrases and stuff. So you have these group of people that grew up in that kind of... They weren't even there for the Attitude Era. You know, but they're going to turn around and say, like, oh, the Attitude Era was the best. It's like, man, you were like 4 years old when the Attitude Era came out. You know, it's like you have no understanding why the Attitude Era took place. You have, for you to talk bad about, say, The Rock, or for you to even begin to think to chant during a flipping Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns match, but this is the match that I've been dying to see this whole time. It's like a one-on-one match. This is the one match I've wanted to see. I'll take any one guy of the Shield against any one guy versus the Wyatt family any day of the flipping week towards the end. That's the match I want to see. I don't want to see a Daniel Bryan match, because I've seen it over and over again. Do I like Daniel Bryan? Yes, I do. Is it an entertaining match? Yes, it is. Is it something new? No, it's not. So let's try to give it to some guys that are new, and let's do it. And they're going to turn around and it's like, oh, you know, Roman Reigns deserves a spot. Oh, the Bray Wyatt's the best. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And then they finally do it, and then you have some stupid-ass crowd. And instead of, like, you know, and then there's people that do come out on Twitter. And the reason why I brought this up is because one of the followers that she follows me, I follow her. She wrote a blog and stuff like that.
One of the 500 and something.
I'm not even going to bring it to 500 right now, because I'm breaking kayfabe right now, dude. Okay. I'm doing a shoot, but you know, she brought it up. She told him to shut the hell up. You know, it's like those are the fans that we need. Those are the fans that are going to do any type of change for this company that it is. But if you're going to have all these flipping people, all these marks come out and write weak ass tweets and put WWE, so WWE, and they get all happy when it scrolls across the bottom. It's like, dude. For them to pick you to pick one of your tweets, it's just because you're navel watching them the whole flipping time, dude.
You got to be a mark to get your stuff right up there.
Yeah, you got to be Pollyanna. You got to say everything's all nice and sweet. And, oh, I love this. Oh, WWE, and it's like, oh yeah, that's the guy we want. They're never gonna put anybody like you or anybody like me or anybody that's gonna criticize anything. You will never see us on the bottom of the scroll. Now, if you wanted to be on the bottom of the scroll, you could, because you could act like a stupid ass bitch and say nothing at all and just be like a total like straight white guy, you know, in terms of like everything's coming up roses, this and this. Me and you could both be on that bottom screen if we wanted to, but we're never going to do that because we actually care about the flipping business and we want to see change. We want to see people get up into that spot. So that's the whole frustration that I have, and it all started with this whole stupid chanting thing. It's like you take one thing that's cool, you take the New Jersey crowd, who to me, you have, I think New Jersey, New York, the New Jersey, New York area, to me, is some of the most sophisticated fans, wrestling fans that are probably around, dude. You have them, and you have Japanese fans. And I think that's it. I think California fans suck. I think the South is its own entity. I respect Southern fans because they the programming that they watched. I grew up watching that programming. But if you're gonna try to emulate or try to be like New Jersey, it's like you can't be like them because they actually know what's up. Every
I think
time
the Chicago fans are pretty smart.
Yeah,
Philadelphia is pretty good.
Yeah,
you got that whole East Coast area. I don't know, some of these West Coast cities are pretty good. I don't think the Bay Area is as good now as it was like 10 years ago. I think
when we did the whole NWO push, right?
Yeah,
Bay Area was straight NWO.
There was that, and Rock when Rock was a heel, Rock was getting love here. When Eddie Guerrero was a heel, he was getting mad love over here, and that was kind of. I don't think it's quite the same as it was back then. But like, I was pretty impressed with like the Seattle crowd. I thought the Seattle crowd was pretty into it and stuff. I mean, there's like pockets. Like, it's hard to predict what city. Like, there's a handful where you can really tell how it's going to be. I mean, I think I don't know. Is Chicago next Monday?
I know it's
coming up. Yeah, I mean the Chicago crowd. I'm really curious to see what they're going to say. I would be even curious to see. Like, I would have thought there'd be more CM Punk chants going at this point. I'm even kind of wondering if they're not piping in some noise a la Goldberg back in the day.
Like, you're saying that the CM Punk chants are right now are being piped in?
Out.
Are they? Well, I mean, but you heard it on Monday. I heard it on Monday.
Yeah, but it's faint and it doesn't last very long. I mean, that crowd, it's hard to say. I thought that crowd pretty much sucked. But even on some of the other Raws and SmackDowns, I would have heard more, especially early on. But, I mean, it's not really here nor there. I don't know. I would say, instead of, you know, we kind of been talking about CM Punk from, you know, a little bit each week here. I'm kind of wondering, like, instead of just kind of griping about the fact that he isn't here, like, who do you think is the guys that are taking the best advantage of the fact that he's not here?
I mean, we talked about it last week. I think it's going to be Roman Reigns, of course.
But who right now?
Nobody can fill this guy's spot. I mean, there's nobody that can be. I mean, they're taking advantage of it. I don't think you can take advantage of it because WWE's so scripted, and they're not running with the people that they're not running with anybody. There's nobody right now in the back room cutting in line to talk to Vince McMahon or say Triple H to say I'm the guy that you need to run with. And until that happens, you know, you're never gonna have that. You know, there's just I don't know how WWE is right now with Triple H or with is it Triple H, is it Vince McMahon? I don't know who's the main person there. But there was a time where you could go up to Vince McMahon, be a straight dick to the guy and say, like Shawn Michaels, and say, hey, I'm the guy you need to run with. And Vince would say, like, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want out of my wrestlers. The whole thing is that I don't even think he's looking for that anymore because he's already won the war. He has no competition. So I don't think anybody can, and, you know, we're saying like, hey, all of these guys should go up and say, hey, you know, you need to run with me and this, that, and this. Well, if Vince says no, and the guy says, well, I'm gonna leave, where's that guy going to go? He can't go anywhere.
Ring of Honor?
Ring of Honor, yeah. Yeah, he has no competition anymore. So that type of wrestler is long gone. You're not going to get into power the same way that, say, Shawn Michaels was, say, like Stone Cold or, say, like even The Rock. You know, you're not going to get those guys anymore because there's no need for competition to beat someone on Monday night. So I don't think there's anybody right now that can do that. I think the one guy that did do that, okay, he played his hand and he left. And you know what? If CM Punk never comes back, I think they're going to be fine. Is it going to suck? Yeah, I think it's going to suck. Now, granted, you have people like saying like Jim Ross and Stone Cold. You know, Jim Ross's first podcast, they talked about CM Punk because it was on the heels of CM Punk leaving. And Stone Cold said like, well, hey, you know, like, first of all, fulfill your contract because you're losing a ton of money. You know, at least fulfill your contract. If you want to leave, then you want to leave. And he's like, he's all, but I think he's going to come back. I think CM Punk will come back, but to what? I mean, because there's nothing we have right now as fans. We have no power of anybody that we want to see. And I think they're slow playing Daniel Bryan. I think Daniel Bryan will get, I think Daniel Bryan down the line will get that title shot. I think he's going to win the title shot. I think they're just playing him very, very slow. This is very reminiscent of Sting to me when it took Sting a year to win the belt from Hulk Hogan. I feel the exact same way about Daniel Bryan. But everybody gets all pissed off. It's like, oh, and it's like, dude, can you not see what's going on? Can you just enjoy it for what's happening? And if it doesn't happen, then get mad. You know, then get upset that he's not getting his due. But it's like, dude, every single time something happens that you don't like, you have to sit there and cry and go, oh, this pay-per-view sucks. This sucks. It's like, the pay-per-view does not suck, dude. Wrestling does not suck. You want to watch crappy wrestling, watch it with us in the 80s when all we had in wrestling was just Saturday mornings when it was just squash match after squash match after squash match. And then when it was the pay-per-view, it was gimmick match versus gimmick match versus gimmick match. It's like that the French-Canadian is going against Don Morocco. It's like, who cares, dude? Like, Matilda got stolen, so now the British Bulldogs are going to fight the Fabulous Rougeau brothers because they have Matilda. It's like, that sucks. You know, it's like you have good performers in the ring. You have good athletes in the ring. There's always going to be one match that you're going to remember. It's like, chill out, dude. Just because your guy doesn't win right here and now, it's like, this is what wrestling is. Hey, boys and girls, this is what happens. You know, it's like there's such thing as a slow play. You can go to any flipping guy and go, hey, do you think Daniel Bryan's being a slow play? You're like, no. I play him regularly. I don't watch his match in minus 10 times. Like, I watch it when it's happening. They don't know what a slow play is, dude. None of these guys know what a slow play is.
Yeah, well, I would just say, as someone that was pretty strongly behind Ziggler, it's like, I was willing to wait for this slow play, but then I see, just because that's the plan for the slow play right now, in 8 months from now when they're thinking, oh yeah, we're going to put the belt on him, that might not how it's going to be at the time. And, you know, it's hard to kind of wait for that given the track record that they have.
When Ziggler won the match, though, when he cashed the Money in the Bank, did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Did you think it was like one of the best things you've seen in a long time?
I was pretty happy.
You marked out pretty hard, didn't you?
I did.
Okay, well, there you go. And so that's the whole thing, is that, okay, so he won that belt, you marked out, I marked out. It's something that we're always going to remember. It's like, it's going to be like the thing, like, it judges. That's like his pop that he got when he walked out, which would happen to be the New Jersey crowd. That is what we're judging all the pops from now on, at least for me. Any pop that anybody gets, is it a Ziggler pop or is it another pop? It's like, well, it doesn't measure up to the Ziggler pop. Hulk Hogan did not measure up to the Ziggler pop, right? So they gave you something that you're going to remember. Now, he gets a concussion, and then creative gets all crazy, and they start doing all this other stuff because ratings were down. But they gave him the chance right there. Now, he kind of had the whole kind of, Wally Pitt thing going on, where, like, he got hurt and someone else stepped in his place, and he hasn't been back there since. Do I enjoy what's going on with Ziggler? No, I don't. I hate it. But there's that one time they gave him the chance to do it. He gets hurt and they go a different direction, then he's left off on the side. It's the same thing with Damian Sandow. They gave Damian Sandow a great run in terms of him leading up. I mean, everything he was doing, like when they gave him the mic and he was bringing people out of the crowd, that was very entertaining TV to watch. When he won Money in the Bank, I was very happy. Was I happy how it ended? No, it didn't. But what else can you expect? It's like, okay. You know, it's like not everything that you want to see happen is going to happen. I think Daniel Bryan will eventually win the belt. And when he does, it depends on what happens after that. I mean, Ric Flair won the World Heavyweight Championship belt for the first time. When he won it, he failed at it, right? He didn't do a good job at it. He even says he didn't do a good job at it. So what do you do after that? It's like, it's one thing to win something and then say, like, well, he didn't get, you know, the run that he should have got. Well, you know what? Maybe he didn't get the run that he deserved because he didn't do enough in the back to do it. He wasn't smart enough in the back to hold his position down and make sure that he was still up there. And we can't say how to do it because it's a different world now. So it's just kind of the whole thing. I mean, this is what a wrestling fan is today. It's like you like a guy here, but then you get mad because he's not doesn't get the run that you want to see, or doesn't have like the whole year long run or whatever it is. And what I'm saying is like, okay, but did you enjoy certain parts of when he was doing it?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed when he won the match and got the belt, but pretty much immediately after that, he went to jobbing out all over the place, and then he got hurt. So, I mean, there was that one moment where it was good, and he earned every last bit of it, but there was no payoff after that. I mean, after that, it was pretty much go back to the same thing, but he's holding the belt. And that's why it was frustrating. And, I mean, that's why I'm just saying it makes it hard for you to invest in a guy like Daniel Bryan, trying to have faith that at some point there's going to be some payout. I mean, yeah, I like watching the matches, and the matches are good, and I'm fine. And I mean, that's pretty much all I have to go with. But, you know, going down the line, looking the way things are getting booked, especially like towards WrestleMania and stuff. I mean, even WrestleMania, I mean, he's going to fight Triple H. I mean, what match could I, what opponent could I be less interested in Daniel Bryan fighting than Triple H? And I mean, I think Triple H somehow thinks that that's going to be the thing that puts Daniel Bryan over somehow. But I mean, that is the least interesting match Daniel Bryan's been in the last 2 years.
And who is the guy that was supposed to fight Triple H in WrestleMania? Who was pegged at that spot before?
Punk.
CM Punk, yeah.
And that would have been the least interesting guy that he would have gone against,
so
too.
The problem that you have is that you have the guy that is kind of running the show still wants to be in the show. And he's taking all the best guys that he can fight. Like, say, like Brock Lesnar, right? Brock Lesnar had a huge... He had a huge pop when he first came back. Well, who did he fight? Triple H. And yeah, Brock Lesnar beat him, but to me, he buried Brock Lesnar in that match because he really exposed how boring Brock Lesnar was. And now every match that Brock Lesnar is in, I'm always going to remember that flipping match that he did with Triple H. And Brock Lesnar, to me, has no star power whatsoever.
I think Triple H beat him.
He might. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I mean, they both lost.
It kind of does.
I don't think it does.
I mean, I think it just points more back to the fact that Triple H just inserts himself into matches and buries guys that he should be trying to build.
See, when he first came back, you asked the question, is Triple H good for business or is he bad for business? And in the beginning, we said that he was good for business. And we said, but we have to wait to see. Well, now we're waiting to see, and now I think he's actually bad for business.
Yeah, no, it's not looking too good so far. Yeah, no, I just thought, like, all signs pointed to him being the right guy at the right time. But instead of being a guy who is really looking out for what is best for business, he looks like he's looking to hook himself up and his boys.
Well, there's that, but at the same time, I think he's also looking at what can make the most money. And I think he's in a warped sense of a world where he thinks that Batista versus Randy Orton is going to draw a lot of money, because it's not. And nobody cares about that match.
I mean, can he honestly think that still at this point, or is he just stuck in a position that he got himself in? I mean, Batista, and I don't even think it's really necessarily his fault, but Batista's in a no-win situation right now. I mean, nobody could give a fuck about Batista. And he's stuck in this main event at WrestleMania, and, I mean, there is no indication that anything he does can get him over or even... like in a positive direction with the crowd right now.
If you were in that position and you knew that, what would you do about it? What would you personally do about it?
I mean, honestly,
seriously,
the only thing he can try to do is get better. That's really it.
No, I'm asking you.
If
you're a Triple H and this whole scenario happened,
if I was Triple H, honestly, I think the only thing Triple H could have done to try to salvage things would have been to let Daniel Bryan win at the Elimination Chamber on Sunday. Because then at least you got Daniel Bryan going against Batista. But because he stuck to the plan, and it's going to be Orton and Batista, that match is going to have zero interest. And it's not really Orton's fault, and it's really, honestly, it's really not Batista's fault either. Orton deserves to be in that position. Orton's earned that. But Batista is not the guy that he should be going against.
And the whole thing is, who's going to win that match? It's probably going to be
Batista.
And so here you go. You're having your top guy, and people always say, like, oh, belts don't matter anymore, this and that. Well, belts do matter. People want to see the belt on the best guy. And the funniest thing about this whole thing is that the one knock against Daniel Bryan is that he's not marketable. You know, the Yes Movement's bigger than this guy. I mean, give me a break, dude. I mean, this guy's marketable as all hell. I mean, if you want to hit that 5 to 10-year-old crowd, what's a better story than having some small guy, some underdog that always finds a way to win just on sheer talent and then charisma alone? I mean, it's like, we've had this champion before, dude. We've had a Shawn Michaels that was this champion. and he had a he had to me had one of the probably the last great run of month to month to month. He's always facing a new guy, and it was always believable because he was smaller than everybody else, so he had to do more to win those matches. That's Daniel Bryan to a T. It's like, ride that, dude. You know, I mean, and so I just I don't see how you look at Batista and you look at Daniel Bryan and say, well, Batista's better for business. He's more marketable. How is the guy more marketable? I mean, the guy's like flipping 50 years old. He has Botox up the ass on his face, you know, and I just don't get it. And then this movie's going to come out. Is that the reason why? Because he's coming out with the movie so they can...
That's it.
Yes. Then they're doing a deal with the people that are doing the movie because they're getting free advertising here, they're getting free advertising there. It's like, you know what, bring back Samuel Jackson. Have Samuel Jackson, like, be a guest host of Shaft and do it that way. Like, oh, I know you. You're Shaft. I mean, come on, dude.
David Arquette for champion right there.
Well, that's pretty much what it's going to be.
Is
Batista going to be, is he going to be green? You know, when is he going to have green skin while he wrestles and stuff?
That would probably be a better gimmick than what he's got going right now.
As long as they have the Sin Cara lights while he's doing it, yeah, then I think so. Benicio del Toro around the ring with him and walk him to the ring.
You're very wrong there, sir. They should have Zoe Saldana come out as Gamora. And then he would get over.
Then he would get over. Yeah, exactly. And then you can bring out, you can have Hornswoggle dress up as Rocket Raccoon. Then he'd be over. And then you can have Santino be,
You could have Kali dress up as the tree, as Groot.
Yeah.
I mean, they pretty much speak about the same.
They move the same, they speak the same.
If Kali could say anything close to I am Groot, that's all he'd need to master.
I am Groot.
I am Groot.
There we go.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Pretty good.
That'd be it.
You could do the voiceovers for him. It'd be like Taka Michinoku, you know?
Indeed.
No, that's not Taka. That was the other guy.
I know, but...
Shofunaku. Yeah, no, but it was a gimmick where they had a...
They had the dub over.
Yeah, the dub over, yeah.
Yeah, and Shofunaku with it, and the promo with...
You're right, Indeed. I was wrong, you're right.
That's twice today.
Twice today, but I can admit we don't have to stop the podcast for me to say that you're right, as compared to someone else where we had an arm wrestle before you could.
Hey man, Medusa and Blaze, that's not too far off.
No, Medusa and Elektra Blaze are the same person.
Like I said,
it was sunny. It was sunny.
She's not too far off either.
Well, now, but back then, Sunny was. She was in on a stick, dude. She was good. She was hard.
Yeah, Medusa was not terrible.
She was pretty bad.
She was good in the ring.
Okay, yeah.
For the time.
If you like diva wrestlers, yeah, sure. If you like watching the divas time. Wrestle, yeah.
She wasn't terrible to look at. At the time.
She was very hard on the ice.
Not as hard as Luna Vachon or anything.
Luna Vachon was very hard on the ice, yeah.
She was brutal.
She was hard on the eyes and hard on the ears, too, with that talk and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're getting to the hour mark, so now it's time to get into segment time. So, it's up to me now. After I told you, like, man, you've been pining for the past 2 weeks, you know, to do a podcast. You're like, are we going to do it? We got to do it. And so we're getting to our...
Well, I had all this stuff ready to go. I wanted to talk about Cesaro, man. We haven't even got to Cesaro.
I don't think we have enough time to talk
about
Cesaro.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That was what I was pining for. But
you're,
nevertheless, I'm sure he'll still be hot in a week.
Okay. So, you want to do Hall of Kayfabe right now?
I need to throw a name at you. You don't have anybody?
I told you the last podcast to come ready with these things.
Wow, that was 2 weeks ago, man.
And you had 2 weeks to do it.
It's so late.
It's 2 weeks to do it, and knowing you, you probably didn't do anything, even though, and you probably weren't even going to be ready for the next Tuesday, dude. So come on, man.
Nah, okay. Let's see. All right. I mean,
you're going to put Paul Roma in there?
No. I think it's kind of a similar theme to maybe some of the last couple guys that we had. Well, I guess not Vince, but... as bad as of a promo as this guy once cut talking about how he did it for The Rock and he did it for the people, I think Rikishi should be in, dude. I think he was pretty good as a singles guy there, like that run that he had.
Yeah.
But I think he was really good as
making a difference.
No, not as making, nah, as tag team.
Okay.
Okay. I think. Him and Samu and Fatu, I thought they were really good. It was when Rikishi was still kind of small. It was super athletic.
Yeah.
And he played that at the time. The only really role that Samoan wrestlers had was just to be this kind of like mindless beast. And, you know, he was good at it. But when the business changed in the Attitude Era, you know, he actually was able to come up with something different. And while he did have a couple of shitty gimmicks, like making a difference and stuff.
And the Sultan.
Yeah, and the Sultan. Like, when he just went as Rikishi Fatu, even though, like, you know, Too Cool was
and that was before the Attitude Era. That was, like, during the right. downtime of wrestling, yeah.
But in the Attitude Era, when he came as Rikishi Fatu, I thought he was pretty good, man. And I thought, like, him and The Rock were, like, the two Samoan wrestlers that really changed the way that, you know, they could be played on TV. I mean, I think Rock is by far and away the guy that had the most impact. But Rikishi also was able to kind of break away from just being that guy and be like a legitimate character. So, I mean, I think Rikishi deserves to be in. We kind of talked a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this guy was going like 400 pounds and was probably pushing 40. And he could still do like a corkscrew getting hit with a clothesline. And he also, honestly, came with, I think it's a Japanese version of that inverted pile driver. But that was a sick finisher when he came with that inverted pile driver.
Oh, yeah.
Towards the end of his career. I thought he was really able to kind of, at a really late stage in a game for a guy who was still 400 pounds, completely change the character that he had to become relevant in a time. And he was one of the more entertaining stars of that time.
I think he's more entertaining than you're giving him credit for. I think during that whole Attitude Era, you always had, like, you know, you had The Rock, you had Stone Cold, you had Edge and Christian. Later on, you had the Dudley Boys. So there, like, each match, you knew what you were going to get. And then when you had Rikishi with Too Cool, you marked out crazy for that guy. You marked out for Too Cool like crazy.
For Too Cool. I did not like Too Cool. But
you liked him. You liked him for video game purposes.
For entrance. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And so maybe we should just address that. So that's what you marked out for. No, I mean, it's kind of like it was a kind of a case where it's funny that you're bringing this guy up now because we're talking about guys that need to get their due, and this is what the kind of the Hall of Kayfabe is for the guys that never got their due. When everything was going on, there are certain aspects. I mean, I didn't like him in the thong. I mean, I didn't understand why he did that. I knew why he did, but he was one of the most entertaining guys out there. I mean, when we were watching, we watched the Raw in San Jose, they closed the show. And the Rock, of course, was there as well, and they were dancing and stuff. And after the show, when the show went off the air, they're trying to make the Rock trying to dance and stuff, and the Rock wouldn't do it, and so they let him do it. In terms of what this guy did for the business is, like, you know, we always talk about how the Rock crossed over, was able to kind of achieve mainstream success. Rikishi was right there too. And Rikishi's kind of thumbprint on the business is seen to this day with his two boys, the Usos and stuff. It's like this standard of wrestling that Samoans do, and he was able to really be like the last, like, Samoan wrestler that could do all this crazy acrobatic stuff. And at a time when there weren't really any Samoans wrestling, he was like the only sole, like, Samoan wrestler, and he was able to get over in a very tough time, which was known as the Attitude Era. And his gimmick was good. I mean, everybody wanted to see the dance at the end. It was hot for about a year, year and a half. And it's funny, like, we always kind of, you know, you talk about the video games. He was fucking good in that video game. I mean, he was good. He was good in both of, you know, when he was in that video game. I mean, he had a ton of good moves on there, and you appreciated him more for what he did. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to argue for that guy being in. It's funny, since it was Black History Month, right when you said Rikishi, I was like, I'm like,
you want to go Rocky Johnson?
I didn't want to go Rocky Johnson. I wanted to
Tony Ellis?
No, I wanted to go Butch Reed. Because I really liked Butch Reed back at that time in the late 80s. But Rikishi, yeah, let's put that fool in there. I mean, he was a lot hotter than people remember. And I think you didn't do him justice during this whole thing.
No, I didn't. I didn't know if you were going to reject him just on the
making
on difference? The I did it for the Rock, I did it for the people promo. But nah,
I mean, he deserved to have a belt. I mean, in some, he could have. I feel like he could have been he should have been an Intercontinental champion.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, he got some really good runs at the tag team title when the tag team title actually meant something. And I think that's kind of a thing you can look at is like at the time when he was in his prime, he got to the highest position that he could have possibly gotten to, because there was no way, you know, in the 80s he was ever going to get anything better than a tag team title, and he got a few of them, I think. At that time, especially the Attitude Era, with the amount of belts they had,
he did one of the best splashes. I mean, his splash, but when with him and the other guy, their splashes were good. I mean, off the top rope. So, yeah, I mean, both of those guys did crazy ass splashes.
Yeah.
And I think even for a small time, he was in WCW as well, right?
Right.
Yeah. And but they weren't the SST, were they? I don't think they were.
So Head Shrinkers was WWE, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they might have been Samoan SWAT team in WCW then.
Yeah. All I know is I remember like.
It's remember funny. He had a Jerry curl.
Yeah.
And he was probably about 260, 270, yeah. But like solid.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty good high flyer.
He always looked like the Tongan Kid too. So yeah. I always get those two guys confused, mm-hmm. Tongan Kid and him. But you know who Roman Reigns is related to?
Aside from them?
You know who his brother is?
Let's see, Roman Reigns' brother. Nah, who is it?
It's Rosie, dude.
Okay. Yeah.
Rosie is his brother. I was like, oh yeah. I never thought about it, but if you think about it, now you look at it like, oh yeah, they do look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned like that Rikishi was kind of like the last Samoan in that Attitude Era, and that wasn't really the case, honestly, because his brother was also a pretty good star that never got his due either, and that was Umaga.
Yeah.
And he may make his way into here someday, but yeah, I thought Umaga, man, I mean, you talk about guys that Triple H really buried that were on the way to being something really big. Umaga, and he was, because he was becoming that kind of savage Samoan at a time where he hadn't seen it in about 10 years. And I thought it was really working for him at the time. And
Triple H did it in one night?
Yeah. He squashed him.
So now we're getting to the part of the golden stick. And it's funny that you bring up the squash one, because I think we need to put that promo in there. Because you always bring it up. And you remember that where that promo came from?
I remember it was Ric Flair was venting on Eric Bischoff about like how he had disrespected Arn Anderson. I think was that the Horseman reunion?
That was the Horseman reunion where they all came out in tuxedos and stuff. And
I hate your guts.
So that we're gonna put that one in there.
All right.
So and that was the whole thing, was because without saying, I was a huge Horseman fan, and I've been waiting forever for the Horseman to reform or whatever it was.
This was the Malenko and Benoit iteration, right?
Malenko, Benoit, what's his name?
Mongo.
Mongo, and then Flair, because Flair was coming back, and Flair was embroiled in a lawsuit, and like his lawyer's telling him, like, don't. He's like, we're gonna make some money, dude. Don't go out there, but he did, and. It was probably, you know, people talk about CM Punk's shoot. Well, this one was as close to a shoot as you can get. It was probably more of a shoot than CM Punk's, because CM Punk's was a work shoot. But this was like one of the first times where I want to say like there's been shoots in wrestling, but this one was like a legitimate shoot. I mean, if you go back and watch this thing.
Flair was heated?
Yeah, and the funny thing is that it didn't start off too well because and this is kind of, it goes back to the what we're talking about today with the fan, right? So they all come out, and Arn Anderson is on the mic. And Arn Anderson is cutting his typical Arn Anderson promo. And the crowd is just dead as all hell. And it's like, dude, I'm like, you know who's on the mic right now, right? You know this is Arn Anderson. And he's going through all of his old shtick. You know, he's like, so you've asked for us. He's all, well, now you guys, he's like, we don't wear white hats, you know, we don't wear, you know, fancy suits or whatever it was. He's like, you know, you don't want to call down the thunder because you're going to get it. And then he introduces Ric Flair and the place explodes. And so he comes walking out, and like you kind of have these fans that really don't grasp what Ric Flair was, because they buried him so much in WCW, he was losing to everybody. So you kind of had like, when he comes out, there was a ton of fans that, of course, I'd probably say 75% of the fans went crazy. But there's some other fans that, like, you could tell they had no idea who this guy was or why people were cheering him so hard. So he comes out, and he just starts laying into Bischoff. I mean, he is so pissed off that he bites his tongue. He's bleeding out of his mouth and stuff and everything, and he just lays into Bischoff. And then it's funny, like, you know, he talks about...
He hates Bischoff's guts.
You're a liar, you're a cheat, you're a scam.
You're a scam.
I hate your guts.
You're no good.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. So, but...
You, a piece of power. You... Cut his mic off.
Yeah. And so, but the whole thing is he's saying all this stuff about Arn Anderson, and you're looking at Arn Anderson now, and Arn Anderson's tearing up. You know, I mean, he's like actually like kind of trying to hold himself back. So it was just a brilliant. And I remember when it happened, and I was like, okay, it's like they're finally giving these guys their due. They're finally going to do something with the horses. They're finally going to put them back to what they need to be. And then it's funny, like Flair says that in one night, you know, he squashed Arn Anderson. Well. The next night they squashed the Four Horsemen, and they never. People were like begging for the Horsemen to come back to what they could be, and they never got the chance because they got embroiled in the whole crappy storyline that WCW is, and it's kind of like a footnote now, in terms of Flair hating Bischoff. And it wasn't. It was a lot more than that. It was more kind of like the Four Horsemen being reestablished, and now it's just kind of like a footnote of the feud between Flair and Bischoff. So,
I think that's the that was the nail in the coffin for Benoit when he realized he had to get the hell out of there. I think that ship had already sailed.
I think it was a case where Benoit wasn't really worth anything to the company, and then I think what happened was. After they, because Flair turned on Benoit and Malenko, and so the Four Horsemen broke up, and then Flair left, and so all these guys that had guaranteed contracts, they were never there. Well, the guys that were always there were the Radicals that came in, and they had like, well, you know, we can't lose Benoit, we can't lose any of these guys, so let's give the belt to Benoit to see if he stays, and he wins the belt, and then the next night he's on Raw. So it's just, you know, up and down. It's just kind of a crazy thing. I think the thing that made Benoit leave was Sullivan was going to be the booker, and him and Sullivan had major problems. You know, not even talking about woman, but you know, Sullivan as a booker didn't like any of those four guys that, you know, that all left. It was Saturn, Malenko,
Guerrero,
and Benoit. So basically, what they said was like, hey, you know, anybody that wants to leave, you can leave. And when Sullivan became the booker, they left. And then that's pretty much happened, so.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure it wasn't, like, I'm sure there was other stuff that led to it, and as far as long as Benoit kind of got stuck on that mid-card to low tier, he probably figured, he got in the Horseman, finally something was going to happen for him, and then that got buried, too.
Yeah, it got buried, like, three or four times.
Yeah.
So you got a match to close everything out?
Nah, I have no match.
You have no match.
I don't.
Well, you were talking about this flipping Roman Reigns thing so much, dude. You were trying to talk to me on the phone.
All right. I wouldn't even really talk about this the Roman Reigns match at Elimination Chamber. I'd more talk about Seth Rollins. I thought Seth Rollins was just great in that match. There was like three, four, five bumps he took that were just like really like big time bumps that he made whoever hit him look great. And like hits that you were thinking, oh, you know, maybe he's going to be done for this match now, and then he kind of worked his way back. I thought he stole the show. I mean, I thought Reigns was really good. Thought Wyatt was really good. Dean Ambrose, you can tell they're kind of doing something with him, but the spots that he came in were pretty good too. And the Shield as a overall, like, they really did a high-level babyface-style match, which was pretty... It was pretty cool to see because they've been doing nothing but straight heel matches since they've been here. And then in an instant, you know, because that was what was necessary, they worked a really good babyface match.
In one night, they push them.
Well, they flipped them. Yeah. They flipped them. But yeah, it was really, I can't really explain it, but it's like the skill and the motor level that you see out of Daniel Bryan, and especially as you see him as this smaller guy that's always working as an underdog, Seth Rollins really, really, it was like watching a fresh Daniel Bryan match. Because you've seen Daniel Bryan do it for like a year and a half. So now, I mean, as good as it is, you've seen it before. It was that same feeling, that same level of energy, the same athleticism, and then having it from a small guy. But it was something that you hadn't seen before. And I thought Rollins... I tweeted that, you know, JR's always talking about maximizing minutes. Like, that was exactly what he's talking about when he's saying maximize your minutes. Seth Rollins, I thought, stole the show yesterday. And, I mean, the whole match overall, everybody was good. But Seth Rollins was the guy, even more than Roman Reigns, that I came away saying, like, I was really impressed with him at the Elimination Chamber.
And probably, as of now, he won't have a match in WrestleMania.
Well, I don't, what's the plan for Reigns right now at WrestleMania? Do you know?
I have no flipping idea.
I mean, it could be a triple threat, maybe. I don't know.
Triple threat against all three guys, the Shield, right, facing against each other?
Maybe, but I mean, the way
for the U.S. belt?
Maybe.
That
wouldn't be terrible. But
it wouldn't be good.
Well, I just think...
I mean, the match would be good, but the storyline is bad.
Right, but I think... The way they're setting them up right now, it looks like, seems like it would make sense that Seth Rollins goes face with Roman Reigns. I mean, he's the guy that's trying to keep the group together. He has never abandoned Reigns, even like in the match against Wyatt when the Wyatt showed up. It was
a great flipping spot.
Yeah, and Rollins came out of nowhere, right? And like that was a great spot.
Yeah,
and all the spots he hit on Elimination Chamber were even better than that. And then but Ambrose had a good spot too when he came in as kind of the cavalry. I mean, he fucked it up in the end when he got the disqualification.
But the three of them are standing in the ring and they're all together. Right. I mean, so there's a glimmer of hope. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if they're ready to break these guys up yet, because I don't know if they can.
I think Ambrose could work well as a face too. I mean, I think all three of them. I mean, it might be the best thing to keep them together and work them all as faces.
Well, let's cross our fingers then, huh?
Yeah, that'd be my choice if I could.
And then I got a study on Cesaro, not fast forward Cesaro for like I did this on this past Raw.
You fucked up if you fast forward Cesaro.
I did
any time in the last 2 weeks. The guy's been.
Yeah, no, I mean that. It was a time crunch, dude. I apologize. I was wrong again. So I'm wrong. You're right.
That's three times in one night.
That's a trifecta right there. So we got a. Gotta have my notes over here. I'm Bad News Ramen. We're at Mood Scale number 66. We'll be around for Mood Scale number 67, and hopefully we'll get off the soapbox a little bit. But it's the frustration, you know. Like there always has to be a frustration show. So this is my frustration show. But it's not about the product. Positive. Yeah, it's not about the product. It's about the fan, because the fans can really push stuff in new directions, but they're not doing it because they don't know how to do it. So,
yeah, well, I don't want to throw like a blanket over everybody. I think it's city to city. I mean, I think definitely Green Bay was a letdown, but I think the majority of cities you're seeing are kind of on board with kind of the new movement. But yeah, the concern is like that creative picks and chooses which crowds they want to decide to listen to.
So, what I want now. It's for all you fat, sausage-eating, white, Green Bay...
White trash Wisconsinites.
Cheesehead sweat hogs is to shut the hell up and don't do stupid-ass chants when you have Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt. Yeah. We're skill number 66. We'll see you around next week. To make we're good to go. Wine one
time. With DJ Honda, this is how we represent. You know what I'm saying? We're going to bash you in the head with something real, real nice. Y'all hold on. Here we go. Check it out. And you don't stop. What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo
with DJ
shit.
Honda.
What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight talk to the Tokyo shit. What up? Hip hop is at the fail of bridge. From New York straight
come on,
talk
come
to
on,
the
come
Tokyo
on,
shit.
Come on, come on, baby.
Walk in New York with the big stick loaded. Most voted for the Daily Tabloid from Tokyo to Roppongi Square. I'll be there. And as the plan unfurls, I freak the G-sugar. So that X, I'm on New York, then the yellow cabs. I move your pectoral muscle worn down to your abs. My man Honda, not the car, but the DJ. Attack the pans and move fast with your hands. Up in the wild lands and walked across the burning sands. Can I have a little more sake in my cup? Yo, Honda, I'm kind of fond of these, yeah.
Japanese women. They treat me like a king and scream my name out loud.